Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Kastoff.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Prefontaine of the United States. Let's keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Ovid's first defeat? Ovid's in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's goal for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome to the 8th episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. I'm Chris Chavez, joined by Alex Lohr and Mitch Kastoff for another week of the show. On this episode, we're going to talk about these world records that are going down. Then we'll hit on the American Ninja Warrior news with Nick Simmons, as well as NCAA track and field gender separation at the outdoor championships, break down the NYC half fields, and, you know, we'll see if we find some other topics like Mo Farah and Andy Vernon going back and forth on Twitter. But we'll start off with the track action that happens while everyone's at work, the world records. Alex, what's that like being in the office and, you know, having a stream on your computer and hoping your boss doesn't catch you? Do you even get in trouble for that at Adidas?
No, it's the exact opposite. I have been tasked with making the office aware of all track and field news. So I throw up the stream and I blast it as loud as I can, and it's fun. And it gets everybody, even if the soccer guys or the NBA guys are reeling from a busy NBA All-Star weekend, they appreciate things like Barshim going for the high jump world record and Dibaba smashing 5K record, and Mo now the 2 mile record. So I think the thing is, you know, we get two world records in 1 week, and I think we really, like, you guys, let's not glaze over that. Let's really appreciate how unbelievable and incredible and impressive both of these were. You know, Mo's record, it beats Bekele's. And, you know, it's been hard for some of us to see past the legend that is Bekele. But we have to understand. So that kind of gives us some context of how good that record really is. And especially since it's his first race back, you guys. It's his first race back. He comes straight in from Ethiopia. He's on a pedestal for sure. He's in England. You know, he has the contingency of the whole country behind him. But I gotta say, man, I am more impressed with Dibaba. Dibaba's record, in the context of how good it is comparatively, and I tweeted this, it is more than a minute faster than any woman has run this year. And you know, you might come back with, hey, XYZ, African women haven't run the indoor 5K, and that's legitimate. But you guys, how good do we think the NCAA women are? They're pretty good. I mean, Jenny Simpson, Brenda Martinez, we've proven that the NCAA system works and the American women are pretty close. Not at this event, bro. Not at this event. Sarah DeSanza was the best in the world, 15:20, and that's great. That's swell. 14:18, are you serious? You guys, 14:18 is so fast. The other weekend, you know, we were giving Jenny B pats on the back for running the American indoor 2 mile record, and, you know, I won't fault that. That was money. But guess what? We look at Dibaba's split. If you do it evenly, it would be faster than the American 2 mile record. So if we have to look toe to toe, Dibaba's is more impressive. She might not be the celebrity that Mo is. I would love her to be a celebrity like that she could be. But oh my gosh, you guys, Dibaba, the Dibaba sisters are something that we have never, ever seen.
She would also be number one in the world at crossing through 3K. So that's like she was just on fire that entire race. I think I was I texted Mitch about this. I was like looking to see because you tweeted out that your 5K PR is still faster than hers. Only at the time she set the record, only 85 guys on the NCAA D1 level could say that. Not to take anything away from her, but she would be a top 100 guy in the race. So that's pretty legit.
That takes scary. Away from the magnitude of it, man. You're taking the juice out of it. She is the fastest woman to ever run that race indoors, and it's the third fastest all time.
Yes.
So to say that there are 85 men faster than her, apples and oranges, you know, male and female, dogs and cats. I don't want to compare that.
I just think it's weird that only 85 guys can say it. Like it's 85 is not a lot.
Regardless, Genzebi Dibaba, I said it on our first episode.
You did. I'll give credit.
When you
we
said,
did not give the right props to her in the first place at the beginning of the year. You're right, Mitch.
Three world records last year. She's just the best. She might be the best indoor runner all time.
I wouldn't put it past her. I would agree with that entirely. With Mo's race, I think the one person who I would have liked to see in that race is Gebre Meskel. I feel like that's the one guy who gives him a lot of competition when it comes to outdoors. And indoors, Gebre Meskel's always been proven as well. Just when we all think that Legat kicks are awesome, we're reminded how insane a Mo Farah kick looks like. So I did enjoy that race, and he dropped the hammer on that last lap, and it was just something else. Left everyone in the dust. Legat's 8:17, I think, was a little bit lost at the very end of that whole thing. Just a solid race for him as well. But Mo Farah is just unreal. Whatever he was doing out there at Ethiopian training, changing things up. I think I saw an interview where he said that this was the first time he was there for training since 2008. So, you know, maybe changing things up a little bit in a world championship year is not bad. But what do you guys want to see? If this was a rust buster to start off the year, what do you want to see out of him in 2015? Obviously, the big thing is the defending the medals. A part of me wants to see him run a 15 again, just because that 3:28 was really good. But I feel like there probably still be a little bit more left in there. Maybe not a world record, but it was entertaining. Do you guys want to see him run a 15? What do you think? What do you want to see out of him in 2015?
Well, you and I discussed this beforehand, Chavez, and I don't want to see him run a 15. I think he's proved himself in that 15. We saw him in Monaco. He's done his thing. Hey, boo. You've run way under 3:30. You did your thing. That's fine. You guys, his base phase, he comes off of it and throws down a world record in the 2 mile. You guys, 8:03 is so fast. And the thing is, he hasn't gone back to the roots where Salazar really hones in on those. You know, we know he's big on those big kicks. So he'll be super lethal, I think, in 5 and 10K. But I'm glad you didn't bring up Gebre Meskel. I think, gosh, he's so good. And Gebre Meskel could threaten anyone in any distance over over 800 meters, basically. In the shorthand, I think Mo is in a better position that he's been to defend his 5 and 10K than he's ever been. Do I want to see him at 15? No.
Mitch?
I've said it a few times in the last few years, but Mo is a guy who in the last few years developed into the best racer 5 and 10K in the world. But he is his resume is just, you know, he's not a speedster. He's just a lethal kicker. And so I would have liked to see him start to get some of those times down. when we're saying, you know, he takes down the Bekele, the legend who took down Gebre Selassie. We look at their PRs, you know, they're in the sub 1240 range. They're in the sub 2617 range. I know Mo ran that really blistering 10K out in Eugene a few years ago, 46. I'd like to see him chop a few more seconds off that. Does he focus on the 5K now? Does he, with the 2 mile speed, does he focus on the 10K now? It's really his bread and butter. I'm not really sure. Regardless, just take one, take both if you don't mind, and you know, really take a big swinging crack at it.
Yeah, Mitch, I'm glad you pointed that out. You know, I think the perception of Mo was, hey, similarly to Galen in the collegian system, oh, he sits to 600, he sits to 400. But now we have a Mo who, I mean, this is his first world record. This is his first legitimate, like, whoa, Mo is faster than anyone ever. He's more than just a kicker, a tactical guy. He's more than just a medal winner now. So I think it's, hey, is somebody going, it used to be, is somebody going to beat Mo to come and get him?
You mentioned dropping those PRs, Mitch. I think right now, just based off of outdoor and Galen's American record at 10K, Galen's got a better PR than Mo when it comes out to outdoor 10K. So that's something that you might get a little bit friendly. It's some friendly competition out at the Salazar camp. Moving on, I guess the next biggest news is we were in for another big announcement from Nick Simmons, and it ended up not being running related and not being Bachelor related or anything like that, or run gum related. It was American Ninja Warrior, which Dee Dee Trotter and I think Lauren Williams once competed in down in Miami, and Dee Dee was brought back for another show. What do you think is the toughest part of Ninja Warrior for a runner? I mean, there's a lot of upper body stuff. What do you think? I think the last time we've all seen Ninja Warrior was when that gymnast ended up winning the whole thing.
I think, you know, when we saw the gymnast, she kept emphasizing the final wall at the end to climb. I think Nick is a little bit more at an advantage than most because Nick isn't lanky, right? You know, Nick has that short explosive. He has a short torso. He has short arms. You know, he's a guy that I would bet can, like, sling out a boatload of more push-ups than anybody we know in a minute. So I would say, you know, nothing is a huge struggle for Nick. You know, I think, honestly, reaching the rings, you just, like, getting that momentum forward and reaching the rings before that big wall ascent at the end is going to be the issue and coordinating that. But, you know, man, I gotta imagine that Nick has something other than just competing involved. You know, he's a businessman. I don't hate it. Let's put track and field in front of as many as we possibly can without demeaning it.
I'm gonna abstain from this question. I'm going to play the fifth, just so I don't have to have my name involved with... I love Nick. I like what he's about. I like him as a runner. I like him as a businessman. Do I want to debate what part of American Ninja Warrior he can be best at? Not really. And so if I don't have anything nice to say about Nick, I just usually just don't say anything at all. That being said, I wish him luck, and I saw him doing some ring stuff, which is hard as heck. I've tried it once, and someone told me that I had to work on a muscle group, and they told me what muscle it was, and I didn't even know I had those muscles. So, good luck to him. I wish it was something a little more sporty related, but hey, whatever gets his name out there, more eyes at USA's, more eyes at Worlds. It's fine with me.
Yeah, so Dee Dee Trotter failed when it came to these bars that you had to, like, really propel yourself across using a lot of upper body strength. I don't think that'll be a problem for Nick. It's really, really interesting that he's not going to be changing up any training. And that's something that's really good to hear, is that he won't be doing anything differently for this thing. So that goal is still there to be in Beijing to try and medal again. So it's good that he's got that focus still. And I'm sure that's one of the first things that Danny Mackey probably countered with when Nick probably brought this up to him after the producers mentioned it. So it's good to see he's got that perspective there. Equally as fun this week, I think the news to track was Mo Farah and Andy Vernon on Twitter. I made sure to turn on my Twitter notifications whenever one of those two would tweet for that day, because, you know, it was awesome that it was followed up the day after Amber Rose and the Kardashians just went after each other. So we kind of had the track and field version of that. Eventually, Taylor Swift gets thrown into the mix. It's interesting because Andy Vernon is no stranger to controversy when it comes to speaking his mind. So Mo did end up letting, you know, his performance talk. So what was the most entertaining part of that whole thing, Mitch?
All of it. All of it. It's like watching a Greek tragedy before my eyes on the internet. It's beautiful and it's terrible and it's a comedy and I love it. And I can't get enough of it. I want more spats. I want more hatred for each other. And you know what? Maybe Mo broke the record by a second and a half. Maybe he did that because he was a little pissed. Who knows? I will say that it is escalating to the point of like actual accusations. I know that Vernon was saying that maybe he should have won gold at Euros because Mo's not really European. Pump the brakes, man. This went from like a Taylor Swift hashtag Twitter beef to something like pretty serious and actually like prosecutable in the UK. So that when it's not funny, it just it becomes pretty terrible. So
I think honestly we need as much I don't want to say trash talk, but we need as much context as possible. And we don't know the relationship between Andy Vernon and Mo Farah, but gosh, you guys, let's embrace a little diciness. Let's embrace, you know, whatever it is, we need it in our sport. Let's get the drama. Let's set the stage. Let's get a little context. And like Mitch said, you know, maybe actually did dig down and make Mo set the world record when most of us looked at the field and like, oh, you know, I'd rather watch, you know, like, I don't know what he said. It was along the lines of, I would rather watch a real race than the Mo show. Well, when you look at the roster in that race, it really wasn't that easy. And when we looked at it before the race, but once the race progressed, you're like, wow, Andy was kind of right. This, but there's no way you could have known that because it was Mo's first race. I mean, on paper, I didn't know Paul Kowich was going to just basically pace these guys and then slowly pace Bernard Lagat as well. So on paper, you couldn't really say this is a pancake race. Again, it was Mo's first race back. But you know what? Let's talk about like Manny Pacquiao. You know, the race that finally got set out between him. We need drama. We need rivalries. We need people to embrace them. We complain about sprinters dodging people. Let's embrace it when there's X number of any sort of dramaticism between two athletes. I don't know how serious it was. I don't understand British humor, but gosh dang it, let's embrace it.
And boxing is in kind of a similar situation as well when it comes to that star power. It's there. People are saying it's on a decline, so this Pacquiao Mayweather fight is something that I feel like most people would probably be rooting for Pacquiao, because if Pacquiao wins, you get, you know, another rematch set, and people are just going to continue to watch it. So boxing is in that same mode as track and field, where this trash talk is probably good. And now, moving on to the next topic, we're talking about outdoor track and field championships. Had a change this past week when they announced that the men and the women will be competing on different days, and the finals are all going to be just one day. So it gets rid of the 5K 1500 double. I think that's the big thing that I kind of get out of it. But for a casual fan that will tune into ESPN, I feel like it would be easier to follow when you see just all the men competing or all the women competing. The the tough part would probably be to get that to translate to the next day and having them tune in for the men's races after the women's races. What do you guys think about the whole decision? Because it's kind of split between some people really like it, some people don't really like it.
Well, I'm going to say it's all about context, right? So it depends what is on before it, what time it's shown, even if it is live. If it's live or archived, we would need to know what's the actual meet schedule, which needs to be released. So what's around it, what's before it, when it actually appears on ESPN. I love the idea that we are thinking, hey, we need to cater to the live presence. We need to be looking at TV and like, what can the casual sports fan understand? But that's us thinking that the casual sports fan is watching in the first place. So if the casual sports fan isn't watching in the first place, it doesn't matter, right? So when is it being shown? Even if it's not live, when is it being shown? You know, the casual sports fan doesn't know that XYZ won the national championship 2 days ago. They are on ESPN, and they just happen to be watching. And guess what? The NCAA championships are on. And if it's a tighter package and it gets people to understand how great the team battle could really be four events out from the last event, we see team totals, and the casual sports fan understands that, then I'm all for it. Do I think that we can get people to come to ESPN and watch the event one day at a certain time in the mid-afternoon and then come back the next day at a certain time in the afternoon? That has to be proven yet. I'm all for it if it can. And you know what? It seems like they're working really hard, and that's the focus. But we haven't seen that yet. I'm glad they're recognizing this and making measures to at least try different things. So we're trying something different, and gosh dang it, I say we get behind it and let it at least see how this year plays out.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I think becoming a year older and a year wiser has made me more of a pragmatic person, and it's very easy to jump at saying, you know, it's always been done this way, why would we change it? And yes, I will say, I did jump on that bandwagon when it rode out of town. And I know it's going to make the doubles harder or impossible for some. 400, 4x4, or 1500, 5K. But it's not like they're making this decision blindly. You know, I have some trust in the people who make these decisions. And for me personally, I will say that whenever, I know that when Alex and I were at the indoor championships last year, the women's indoor race, one of the best competitions I've ever seen in my entire life. Very difficult to follow. And it came down to the last race. Putting that in context is very difficult when you have both a men's and women's championship going on at the same time. So if you can prioritize that and make what we all really want for the sport of track and field to be a team sport, then, hey, take a chance for a year or two. See what happens. If it doesn't work, then we'll go back.
Also announced this week are the NYC half fields, which will be on March 15th. That's going to be a very busy weekend for run junkies just because of LA going on, NCAA going on. So this is going to be another entertaining one. We've got Meb versus Ritz up in front. Abdi will be in the race as well. Tegan Camp returns after a very short 2014 season where I think he only raced twice. Zielinski making his half marathon debut after the longest he's gone was 25K at the U.S. Championships. And Bumbleow making his debut as well. We've got Eggleston in the mix, Kabata, and Wesley Career will be running as well. Lots of talent in that field. But I think let's talk a little bit about Ritz and Meb because Ritz is racing a lot, and he's showing he's pretty fit. He just won a half marathon this weekend. He's going to be running another one in a couple of weeks. I'm just always a little bit afraid with Ritz when it comes to his health, because over racing, it seems like he's kind of let the reins loose since leaving Salazar a little bit. But over racing, with this guy's history and his just how injury prone he is, I'm a little bit nervous every time I hear he's going to race. I'm wondering if he's going to make the start line. So I'm hoping he can be there for Boston, and New York will be another step along the way. What do you guys think about Ritz's current hot streak?
Well, we have to understand that this is a half marathon, okay? And Ritzenheim, a half marathon, does really not obliterate your legs. Not that he's not going to try really hard, but it's just 13 miles. This guy probably slings out 18-mile runs every Sunday, you know? Ritzenheim has been doing the 120-mile game for a long time. I don't think the NYC half is going to be the thing that brings him down. If you're on a hot streak, if you're feeling good, if you're having decent results on these last couple cross-country races, and those are empowering you, and that's kind of a different angle that he's gone over the last couple years, then if I was him, I would say keep on rolling, you know? If I'm going to compare Meb to Ritz in a race like that, I got to go with Ritz. I mean, if we're talking about 5K, 10K, you know, PRs, I think we got to give the nod to Ritz because his just wheels are so much better over the last couple of years. Eggleston, man, he's the up-and-comer. I think he's a challenger. He's done really well on races that have kind of been under the radar. Bumby in it is really interesting to me. Bumby looked really, really, really good in the 3K a couple weeks ago in Washington, almost as if, like, his legs could not contain how fit he was. I mean, he was just, he could not physically make his legs go any faster. I think he's in really good shape. Selinski, you know, he just ran a 3K indoors. He ran, like, 8:20 or something. I don't think we take that to heart at all. I think it's a long buildup to the trials for Selinski. Let's not, even if he runs like BS at this New York City half, I won't care. Because he's a coach now. He has long-term expectations. Let's see how he runs at the trials. So Wesley Carrere in it. Carrere wouldn't be in this if he didn't think he could run. Career, he's run NYC a couple times. I would not be shocked to see him up front. Teague has continually said that he's not going to be up on the track, taking the track seriously. He's still running decently on the track. I think the guys he's training with are ready and can't wait to see him on the road. You guys, we need to remember that he's an American record holder. Yes, it's at 2 miles, but Teague is a veteran, and I would not be surprised if he ran really, really well in the half marathon.
Some quick notes that we've touched on. I'm always thinking about that, well, it might be 2 and 3, but I'm always thinking about that third spot, that third marathon spot for Rio. Who's it going to be? Well, you're going to have the wheels to run a quick second half of that race. So I'm looking at guys like Kabata. He PR'd in Berlin. He's looking to drop that half PR just a tiny bit. A guy like Gotcher, who ran 2:10 in 2010, 5 years ago. I like completely forget. One of the fastest debuts, maybe, ever. Not ever, but of all time. And the guy that I'm looking at for Americans is... And a guy that everyone just glosses over, Jeff Eggleston, who's been running these marathons in Japan and coming over. You know, he's run 62:41. He has a lot to gain from a fast NYC half. But the guy I'm looking at who, you know, could surprise in there is Bumby. He's a 5K guy. He ran 8:13 for 2 miles indoor 2 years ago. Sorry. But he's never run really a 10K ever. I think he's broke 28 minutes barely. So, yeah, a half is a big step up. But then, yeah, a half is a big step up for him.
I wouldn't put too much past Meb finish where he's like 6th or 10th or anything like that, because we saw last year he finished like 6th. And then he ended up winning Boston. So I would probably end up taking Ritz over Meb in this one. But again, Bumbleow would probably be one of the guys to watch. Alex, you mentioned like Solinsky maybe not needing to have that great of a race. I might think the opposite, because he doesn't have that ticket punch to the trials yet, and for the marathon at least. We're all waiting for his marathon. He's got to run under 65. So I think in this one he'll be after time. Because he's not on the start list yet for Olympic trials in LA. So we'll probably see a very fast half marathon from him. So when I talked to Tegan Camp earlier at Milrose, he said that the plan is for him to toe the line at in LA for his next marathon. And he's actually one of the, just like Eggleston and these other guys contending for that third spot, I would say Tegan Camp has a good shot of that with his 2:11, 2:12, I think it was, from Chicago. So he hasn't run a marathon in almost two full years now. So I think Tegan Camp is ready for a big breakthrough in 2015 on the roads. This might be the start of it. Jerry's group is doing he's doing a really good job with all these guys, and he's passing on the same workouts to Solinsky. Solinsky tweeted out that he ran a marathon in practice the other day. So that's definitely interesting. He's got to run under 65 at least, because then you start to really cut it close. He might have to run another fast half marathon in the summer. So I think there's going to be a lot of at least a few eyes on Solinsky to put together a good performance here. And then of course, you know, Wesley Carrier will be doing. He's out in Kenya, I think, right now doing his training. He'll be up in front, but NYC half. It's really going to be an interesting race to follow, because we'll see all these really big guns, and it's a toss-up, I would say. Real quick, your pick on who's probably in the best shape right now to win this whole thing. I'm going to go with Ritz.
Agreed. All by Eggleston and Meb.
Are we going international too?
Yep.
I don't think Sambu.
We had the defending champ Sambu was there. Ooh, he was there last year.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Sambu. Damn. Ah, that's tough. I guess I would put Sambu in front of Ritz at this point.
Like I mentioned with Tegan Camp, who I would actually put Tegan Camp in my top three. When it comes to Teague, and this approach of waiting almost 3 years between marathons, or 2.5 is probably what it ended up being. Mitch, what are your thoughts on that? Obviously, fitness just doesn't go away, but 26.2 miles is no joke. To wait that long between two attempts, do you think it's a risky approach by Jerry?
It's a risky approach, but a calculated one. You just got to win a race. You don't got to run fast for that one. And so, as long as he knows he has legs for it and to run fast at those certain parts of the race, I say, hey, man, go for it. I like it. Teague's not an old man territory, but he's no spring chicken. So would I advise it for everyone? No, obviously not. But I like it. It's different. It kind of throws everyone for a loop. Imagine standing in line next to him. You really have no reference for what he's run or what he can run. He's a wild card.
And then, obviously, we're all going to be excited for Solinsky. Once he throws down that sub-65 performance to get his ticket punched to the start line. Now, that's one where your first time is going to be Rio. Alex, I think you maybe have chatted with him a little bit when we were at WISCO or something like that. What do you think about Solinsky's approach to the marathon?
Well, Solinsky, I would think that there is no rush, right? Solinsky is very aware of that's where his career is headed, and I think we know that. You know, he's moved away from Oregon, and he's moved into this different situation, and he needs to play this out to his strengths, right? So he's going to punch that ticket probably, get that qualifier, and then just put it in the bank, right? So if it's him running his first marathon in the Twin Cities, I don't know. If it's him just getting this qualifier and then just getting ready for that for trials in LA, I would guess that he's doing it on his own terms. It's not rushed. He cannot rush it. He can't rush it at the same rate that the other guys in Schumacher's group is doing. And it's probably good for him to be a little bit removed from that. He's getting a little perspective. Hey, this is how college guys progress at X distance. This is how I progressed at this 10K distance. And then the mix is something him and Jerry are going to be able to agree upon. You know, I think people would love to see him run a full marathon in the Midwest this fall, but I think he's going to play his cards very, very, very safely and just get to trials healthy.
Because in the end, that's all that matters, is being healthy on that start line in 2016. All right, I think we've hit on all major topics from the week. There were some fast times thrown down at Alex Wilson. Give some props to the Arkansas crew. Stanford also there as well, looking strong. But coming up ahead this upcoming weekend, what's on schedule?
It's all conference weekend. It's a big, big weekend. And we need to talk about the races and the, a couple of years ago, Mitch just poured over a piece on Flowtrack called the Sweet 16. And that was something that, you know, we really rode hard, and it laid the context of each event. And Sweet 16 is obviously the individual events. 12 is the relay events. But that's something that we're going to keep tabs on, obviously, into the conference weekend events. Conference indoor track is awesome, you guys. It's so, 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 so great. You know, if you want to bring the casual sports fan, if the conference indoor meet is on your campus, please bring the casual sports fan to it, because they will be able to understand it from that perspective, who wins, who doesn't. You know, athletic directors seem to pivot how they perceive each X program and each X coach on whether they won X meet, and usually that's the conference meet. But we need, if we look at the events that usually are typically affected on the NCAA level by the conference meet, it's only a couple, right? So we look at it and say, hey, this team wants to win a conference title. Usually it's not a, you know, they slung a super fast time down type event. But times we need to look at are the DMR, obviously. Alex Wilson, we saw a couple more times sneak under in here. I think Arkansas looked very, very impressive. I think Arkansas, they are very, very threatening. They have very good relays, and I don't know why they couldn't win the DMR 4x4 type events. But I'm going to actually be at MPSF, so look out for those DMRs. A lot of Pac-12 teams, I think, could sling a couple faster times. Washington men, Washington women, Oregon women really haven't shown their cards as far as those events. So I'm really excited to see those, and I'm very, very much excited to see what men can run under the 3:56 mark, because I think if you are legitimate in thinking that you're going to have a shot at that mile field, you got to run pretty emphatically under 3:57. So look at those conference title races, the mile, the DMR, and the 4x4 are the big events to look for this weekend, and those just happen to also be the events that have a big X factor come NCAAs. When it comes to field events and sprints, I really honestly think that those are kind of set in stone. Those are the favorites come NCAAs. Those won't be affected by the conference meets, but it's the 4x4s, the DMRs, and maybe a couple of the jumps. But as far as conference stuff goes, only four events will really be affected as far as NCAA positioning.
So as always, conference weekends are tough to run really fast on, really fast at, because, you know, some of these races end up being tactical. I think I'm going to have my eyes on the SEC championship. That's an always fun one to watch. I will keep tabs on the Pac-12 schools out in the West Coast. And we'd like to end the show, before we close out the show, I like to end it on a fun note. And the fun topic of the week, I guess, will probably have to be McFarland USA hit theaters this past weekend. I guess shameless plug for Disney here. I did not have any plans on seeing it because I had my doubts about it, just being how, you know, maybe I don't know if Disney would be able to get a cross-country movie right without being a little bit too corny or anything like that. But all the reviews I've been seeing have been awesome, and it's one of those stories that I think maybe people outside of California didn't really know too much about it, so it's nice to see it on this big platform. So now I have plans on seeing it, and I might see it in the next coming days. Mitch, do you have plans on seeing this movie?
Not before. I have to finish my list of Oscar movies, which are happening right now, so when the film that wins Best Oscar, I can say I've seen it, which I have already. But I will say it is getting good reviews. It's at 77% Rotten Tomatoes. I picture, like, kind of not the level. Don't even start. But, like, when Hoosiers was first released, it was a little campy, and it aged well over time. Not saying this does the same, but people have said okay things. Is it going to become a classic? Who knows?
You know, I'm at the point where I'm like, you guys, who, it's getting decent reviews. We got a little momentum. I'm at the, you know, it's similar to my Ninja Warrior thing. Like, let's get some eyes without diminishing and belittling the sport. I think it's great. You know, the very, very core of our sport is the high school coach, right? And if we can celebrate that moment that filters into the rest of our community that is running now, like, let's celebrate it. You know, I don't really care if the running looks good or bad. It came out during NCAAs, and afterwards, I saw Dave Smith in a Buffalo Wild Wings, and he was like, you know what? It really wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. Then he found out I was a music major and asked me to sing Ave Maria to him. But that's beside the point. It's not getting hate. It, you know, it has Kevin Costner. If it's a mock of every other Disney movie, XYZ of like Field of Dreams that has Kevin Costner, I don't care. If it gets more eyes on our sports, if it gets kids to invest, if it gets a high school coach to like 10 kids to believe in him, if it gets the, you know, suppressed California Mexican culture to invest a little bit in our sport, then gosh dang it, let's embrace it. I don't care if it crashes and burns once it comes to the DVD. Let's embrace it. Let's it's not fake. It's a real story. The real story is even better from what I read. So I'm going to embrace it. I'll see it as soon as I can, and more kudos to it. It's cool that they and I appreciate that they even brought in some of our elite characters. You saw Leo, you saw Will Lear there at the premiere. They brought it to NCAAs. That's pretty cool, guys. And Disney could have totally sidestepped the running community, but they involved us, and I appreciate that. And I say, you know what, let's give this thing a shot.
Because nothing gets worse than Daniel Craig running in as James Bond. So that's kind of like the low bar, and anything is better than that if we want to critique running in movies. But yeah, I think that does it. I'm actually going to go I might check it out this upcoming Friday. So that does it. Thanks for tuning in to yet another episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. We'll catch you next week as we'll have conference roundup going on, and then other breaking news that'll happen throughout the week. So thanks again.